Nuketown Radioactive number 53 for Monday, July 23rd, 2007. This time on Nuketown Radioactive, I run down what I'm reading and watching this summer, talk about some frustrations with geek home improvement, determine how to boot and nuke a hard drive, and review the near-future science fiction novel Rainbow's End by Werner Vinge. Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive. I'm your host, Ken Newquist, and this is the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. And I am freaking tired. I got up way, way too early this morning because I needed to write my game review for sci-fi.com. It's about Project Silphide, Ark of Deception. I think that's exactly how you pronounce it. I'm not quite sure. I don't think I've ever actually heard anyone pronounce this particular game's name, but I pitched the game late last week, and it got approved, and I had to play it and turn it around this weekend. So that would have given me enough time to maybe knock it out on Sunday, although I usually like to give myself a little time after playing a game to just kind of sit and digest it before writing the review. But something else also happened this weekend, which kind of nicely segues into my first topic, which is, yes, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows was released, and I spent pretty much a good chunk of Saturday and an even bigger chunk of Sunday reading that book and alternating between playing Silphide, the game, and reading this book and, of course, watching the kids. So it was a good read, an enjoyable read, and I think it proved to be a suitable ending to the series. It's sad to see it go, but I think it really went out in style, and I certainly wasn't disappointed. I mean, when the only downside I can say to the novel is that there is one hell of a body count, and I don't think that's necessarily giving anything away to say that. Certainly the body count has been growing over the last couple of books, and well, this is the climax. This is when the big fight comes with the Death Eaters and Voldemort and his whole cult of evil that's risen up. So I think I'll probably do a review of it, including some spoilers, on an upcoming show. I want to give everybody a chance to digest it. You know, I know not everyone reads quite as fast as I do, but I want to give everybody a chance to, you know, read it, gather their own thoughts. I have my own ideas as to why I think this was a good book. And unfortunately, you know, I think it's one of those things where I could probably give a fairly generic review that, well, like this one, that doesn't really touch on what happens in the book. But I think in order to really drive home the point of why it was a good novel, I need to be able to talk about what happens and the ultimate conclusion to the novel. So we'll wait a little bit on that, you know, let everybody kind of digest it, right? I mean, it's a pretty big book. I will say that having finished this novel, I would love to go back and reread all the other books. That had been kind of my tradition prior to this book coming out. I would always listen to the audiobooks and then reread the last novel that came out. But unfortunately, I just really didn't have the time to do that this time around. And moreover, I don't have a commute to listen to the audiobooks in cassette form anymore. So, you know, when I was just going in my car and could throw the tapes in, that was one thing. But, you know, now I'm totally on my iPod and damn it, the books are stuck on freaking audio tape. But I digress. The other book that I'm reading right now, which I actually put down in order to pick up Harry Potter and just blow through it, I probably did read the book way too fast. I really enjoyed it, but I'm definitely going to have to go back and read it again just to catch all the nuances. But anyway, the other book that I've been reading is Pushing Ice by Alistair Reynolds, which is about a deep space ice mining crew working near Saturn when suddenly the ice moon Janus breaks orbit and starts accelerating out of the solar system. And that has proven to be a pretty good book. I know I mentioned both of these novels in my my summer reading list, and so far I have not been disappointed. Pushing Ice, well, it's starting off as more of a hard science fiction novel. Actually, the prologue is very much space opera, but at this particular moment right now where I am, it's pretty much more of a hard science fiction edge to it. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens when they catch up to the actual moon, well, the former moon known as Janus. So I will hope to review pretty much everything that I've read on my summer reading list. So you can look forward to that in an upcoming show. And in case you missed it in the intro, I have also just finished Werner Vinge's Rainbow's End, and I'll have a full review of that later on. Now, as far as what I'm watching right now, well, I got a couple different things. The first is the 4400 season 3. In season 2, we learned that the US government has engineered and administered a powers blocking drug to the 4400 that sickened most of them and killed a few dozen. Now the drug is gone, but what happens to the 4400 when they're allowed to realize the true extent of their powers? Now, for those of you who haven't been watching the 4400, this show is on the USA Network, and it's kind of a got a low profile. You don't hear a lot of people talking about it, but it's in its actual fourth season right now, so clearly it's got a following of some kind, and I like it. I've liked the shows because I think it's an interesting premise. Basically, it's an excellent superheroes premise. We haven't quite gotten to the whole superheroes thing yet, but basically, the premise is that you have a group of people who are kidnapped from throughout time. These are all the people who've disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle, or just woke up one day and they were no longer there. Well, they're all returned at the same time, and we learn in season one that the reason why they were returned was to basically save the future. The original thought was they were abducted by aliens, which would be the obvious answer, right? But no, they were abducted from people from the future, re-engineered and sent back with all kinds of weird powers to somehow change the future for the better. So it's been a really interesting ride so far. I can't say that it's the most compelling television out there, but I think if you're looking for a good sci-fi fix and you've pretty much been through everything else, I would check it out. It's enjoyable, and I think it's enjoyable in the same way that Heroes is enjoyable, in that you've got this unfolding backstory and you've got all these different people with these different powers trying to come to grips with what's going on. And I think occasionally some of the stories can be a little cliched, but at the same time, the stress between the 4400 themselves, the government, the people at large, it all makes for some good watching. The other show that I'm getting caught up with right now is Doctor Who, Season 2. The new Doctor, well, the new Doctor, has arrived, and he's got the zany dark thing down pretty well. I'm not sure if I like him better than his immediate predecessor, but the first few episodes have been pretty good. And, I'm new to Doctor Who. I really didn't watch it much in its original incarnations, and I've pretty much just been seeing the sci-fi. Well, I guess it's technically the new BBC releases that have been on sci-fi. And I think overall it's been a good series. I think, a lot of what you see in Doctor Who is stuff that you've seen elsewhere, particularly in, things like Star Trek. But and then the question becomes, did they borrow from Doctor Who, or did Doctor Who now in its new incarnation borrow from Star Trek? But in any case, they're putting a new spin on it, and I like alternative worlds, I like alternative histories. And I like how the new series is evoking some of the classic Doctor Who stuff, like the Daleks and the Cybermen and stuff that I know of because I've written enough stuff about Doctor Who, reviewing fan websites and stuff, but I've never actually seen it in action. And it's nice to see all this stuff actually coming to life for me. So I think if you haven't had a chance to see Doctor Who, I would pick it up. I would definitely start with season one, which I think so far has been better than season two, but I will reserve judgment until I've gotten a chance to see everything. Now, the last thing I wanted to talk about was my computer repair frustrations, a little bit of actual geeky home improvement. It seems like everything around here just wants to freaking break. The first thing that broke was the HP scanner, which we have a very old HP ScanJet scanner. It's so old that the drivers aren't being kept up to date as much as we might like. And I think it's, I don't know, it's probably like 8 years old now. And for some reason, it just decided to stop working. So I had to go upstairs, troubleshoot exactly what the problem was with it. Turns out that, it wants to be plugged into a certain USB port on Sue's Windows XP machine. It wants to be shut down in a particular way. It wants to be started up in this particular way. And I think ultimately, when this thing dies for good, we're just gonna break down and replace it with something. Now, Sue has been advocating to get an all-in-one printer scanner combo thing. And I'm not exactly sure how I feel about that. The ones she's been talking about are somewhere in the neighborhoods of like $150. And I just don't know if the quality is good enough on these things. If you guys have experience, I'd love to know. Is getting one of these combo things worth it, or are you just going to ultimately pay for it in the end as it breaks way, way too soon? Now, speaking of other broken things and printers, my other frustration lies with our Canon photo printer, which just stopped working. It does not want to print the, let's see, the magenta and photo magenta colors. I have tried everything. I've tried a gazillion different self-tests. I've tried replacing the ink. I have tried doing it on my Mac OS X machine. I've tried doing it on my Windows machines. I've tried doing it on another Mac OS X machine. And unfortunately, nothing is freaking working. So I think the ultimate solution here is going to be to call Canon, to break down and call Canon and ask if there's anything else we can do. And then, if all else fails, maybe get it repaired. I mean, it's definitely out of warranty, but it might be better off just paying to get it fixed because, printers, especially a good photo printer, which this one was right up until the moment it broke, aren't exactly cheap. So those were my two big geek home improvement projects. There's actually a third, which was wiping my ancient Windows PC's hard drives. We're going to be talking about that a little bit more in Netheads.
From Sam Chupp, co-creator of the role-playing game Changeling the Dreaming, comes a new fantasy novel set in a world over 30 years in the making. Heart of the Hunter is a gritty but fast-paced tale of adventure in the deep forest.
This is why my lovers leave my arms bare. My weapon's bound to my spirit. Got this dagger custom-made, preacher. Balanced, sharp as a pretty boy's tongue, and just as sweet.
Arin the Gypsy, Alibar the Shepherd, Peter the Veteran, and Raven the Sneak Thief must protect a small caravan on its journey from the center of civilization to the icy frontier. The Nail Tongue's number grows daily as their hunting parties plunder further south from the wastes. Winds are changing, yes, and mayhaps now they turn the way we wish. Along the way, they will come to know of a long-lived hatred and an even older power. An ancient talisman known only as the Heart of the Hunter. Let us kill the one who dared kill our own. We will then go to Mother Yulene and add the killer's name to the chant of death as a warning to those who would do such a thing. They don't fight for glory or for honor or revenge. They just want to survive and get paid. The girl's pa was a merchant, right? There'd be a merchant guild bounty. Assurance payments. No doubt. You could letterbox ahead. Find out for sure. And how does a mercenary know about assurance payments, pray tell? I can also dance a jig, sir. But it ain't my bread and butter. Come feel the magic and wonder of Kor and I, the magical country. This card here, it is the tangled skein. A small thread seems to be nothing, but unravels all. I can only surmise this means there is more to your journey than we can know. Come join the journey. Listen to the audiobook for free at heartofthehunter.com. The song Epic Orchestral Theme is by Rob Vandenberg.
So, in keeping with this sort of geek home improvement theme I've got going this show, the first thing I want to talk about is Chore Wars, which was recommended to me by Mer Lafferty and Doug Rapsom, Doug of Geek Acres, Mer Lafferty formerly of Geek Fu Action Grip. I still can't believe she canceled it. But anyway, the whole idea behind Chore Wars is that maybe chores would be a little bit more fun if you could get experience for doing them. Things like vacuuming the house, getting dinner ready, cleaning up your office, that kind of stuff. So the idea here is that you do your chores and then you submit to the site that you've completed your chore. When you complete the chore, you get experience and you have a random chance of accruing some gold pieces and some magic items and possibly having an encounter with a monster. Stuff like bratty kids and overbearing bosses and that kind of stuff. I belong to a group called the Mopcast Banditos, and there will be a link to that in the show notes. Actually, I guess there's a link to my character in the show notes. Actually, looking at the link, I'm not sure what exactly the link is in the show notes, but you can find it at www.churewars.com. I gotta say, I don't know how long this is going to go on for. I've been playing around with it a little bit, starting on Friday and then kind of keeping up through the weekend. I think it's fun. It'll be more fun if other people are doing it as well. There's about, I think, probably about a dozen people in the Banditos. So I think it would be even cooler if it had some sort of a plug-in to Twitter so that it would automatically post to Twitter when you had accomplished one of your tasks. But it's not quite that Web 2.0-ified just yet. So if you're looking for something a little bit different, maybe you need a little bit more inspiration to get the chores done around the house, well, check this out. Now, talking about geek chores, I have had sitting in my basement for way too many years a couple of old Windows XP machines. Actually, one's a Windows XP machine, I think the other was a Windows 98 machine. Both of these machines are older than the hills. One's the Compaq that I got when I graduated from college. It was the first PC I got after my original Windows machine died. And when I say my original Windows machine, I mean my original Windows 3.1 machine died. I think when they opened up the case to show me exactly what had happened to it, the motherboard was completely fried and there were dust bunnies the size of, well, real bunnies living inside the case. Now, the other machine was a like kind of just a homegrown Windows machine that I got with a friend of mine when we went to one of these kind of computer fairs in the area where you just go and you get it from just a vendor, you know? So you go out, you say, oh yeah, I want this motherboard, I want this graphics card, I want this RAM on it. You know, it's not a brand name machine. It's just got a bunch of miscellaneous Franken parts in it. And it was okay, it did pretty well. I mean, it was good for its time, but both of these machines were just really old and they just need to be recycled. So Sue has found a place in Allentown actually that will recycle the computers, but you know, obviously before you give away computers, even to be recycled and stripped down for their valuable metals, you want to erase that hard drive because you don't want anything embarrassing or, I don't think there's anything embarrassing on those except for a couple of old D&D maps. But, you know, you don't want family information, photos, financial records, that kind of thing falling into the wrong hands. So with that in mind, I went out looking for some sort of a utility that I could use to blow away these old computers. And one of the caveats that I had, or one of the requirements that I had, is it had to be able to run from a floppy disk. Because for whatever reason, I was just never able to get either of these machines to boot from CDs. So floppy it had to be. So I finally found something called DBAN, which stands for Derek's Boot and Nuke. And it supports 7 different erasing techniques, including DOD5220-22.M. Which actually makes 7 passes over your hard drive as it erases it, just rewriting everything with random information. There are a couple of other things. There's one that's it's like the official erasing protocol for the Canadian Mounties. There's another DoD standard in there. There's one that makes something like 35 passes over the hard drive, which turns out is a little bit excessive, but it works great, and it works from a floppy disk. It actually works from a CD as well, and I think, if I remember correctly, it'll even run from a USB dongle. So that worked perfectly for me. I mean, to be honest, it was harder for me to get the data off these computers because, well, they don't necessarily work and play well with the rest of my network since they don't have wireless cards in them, and I didn't want to sit down there with the Windows laptop trying to port things over. So I ended up burning some stuff to CD and zipping some stuff up and mailing it to myself through Gmail. And once I finally got the files off, I set up the computers upstairs in the dining room and threw in the floppy disk, booted up, told it what I wanted to blow away, and it did it. Now, I'm not exactly sure how long it took. I think it may have taken about an hour to get through the 20 gig drives, but it worked really well. I mean, As far as I can tell, the hard drives are gone. When they boot up, Windows is no longer greeting you anymore. So that is, well, that's a pretty good sign, right? You can check it out at dban.sourceforge.net. I also have a link in the show notes to a review on NewsForge, which talks about dban, a great tool for obliterating your data. And I think the headline says it all.
Ah, welcome, welcome. Come on in, please, please. Have a seat, warm yourself by the fire, and listen to the friendly minstrel's song. What? You've come seeking the tome? Well, you are in luck. I am the keeper of the tome. And what would you do with this mighty podcast? Oh, good, good. You have the right idea. You see, the tome is a source for expanding your understanding of Dungeons and Dragons and what various books have to offer. The tome's knowledge is endless when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons. So sit, listen, and become a sage of great renown. The Tome is a Dungeons & Dragons review podcast focused on official content. You can find The Tome at http://thetome.podbean.com or search for The Tome on iTunes.
I've been a fan of Werner Vinge's ever since reading A Fire Upon the Deep and A Deepness in the Sky, which are two far future novels, which both, to one extent or another, appealed to the, the libertarian part of my soul. This summer, the first novel on my reading list was Werner Vinge's Rainbow's End, which is his latest book, and unlike the previous novels that I'd read by him, take place in the not-too-distant future. This particular novel is 381 pages long. It was released by Tor Books, and the hardcover was published in May 2006. The novel opens in 2025 with the brilliant poet and unrelenting bastard and hard-ass Robert Goo waking up from a 25-year-old long nightmare of Alzheimer's to find his body and mind rejuvenated and the world radically different from the one he remembers. His son Bob and his daughter-in-law Alice are essential agents in the war on, well, the exact nature of the war against the next big thing isn't really known. What it will be, no one can tell. It could be something old and conventional like suitcase nukes, or it could be something wholly new like genetically engineered viruses designed to attack specific races. He also finds they have a brilliant daughter, Miri, who's easily as brilliant as they are, even though she's only a kid, and to his horror, he has to go to school with her. He's sent to the local high school to learn the essential skills for learning in this new age, everything from wearing computers on his person, to navigating virtual reality worlds, to performing the instant search and analysis that everyone older than 3 years old can do. He finds himself struggling to adapt to this new world, terrified at his inability to recover his poetic voice, and disgusted by his newfound insight and even enjoyment of mathematical and technical problems. What he doesn't realize is how dangerous this new world is, and what it means for him, his friends, and his family. Now, this book's cover describes it as a novel with one foot in the future, and really that's exactly what it is. The book follows an emerging threat to the world, one that may be its most terrifying yet, You Gotta Believe, or the first truly effective mind control scheme. The UGB plot proceeds from multiple angles and reaches a thrilling conclusion by the book's end. But the storytelling takes backseat to the technology for most of the book, and it's the compelling nature of that future, both for good and evil, that moves the reader along, not really the plot itself. Now, that's not to say that the plot doesn't eventually come into its own as the book gets probably about halfway through it, but really what's drawing you on and on is the vision of things such as wearable computers, which the user can interface with through subtle body gestures, virtual worlds viewed through contact lenses that overlay the real world and allow you to have multiple different interfaces running simultaneously. So, you know, imagine you've got one person who's walking down Main Street, they're seeing a sci-fi dystopia. Another person's walking down Main Street, they're living in a dinotopia with dinosaurs running around. Someone else is walking down Main Street and they're overlaying data on the street and they're seeing demographic information as they look around. It's that kind of world. There's also things called belief circles, which are competing for attention on the world stage, some originating in the first world, some in the still developing world, and these are basically super memes, ideas and viewpoints for looking at the world, and they're filtered through this entire wearable virtual interface. Another key concept in the book is the idea of golden minefields, in which there are medical miracles, such as where we see with Robert Goo, in which he is able to have the effects of Alzheimer's completely driven away. He's able to have his body rejuvenated to that of a teenager, but he's one of the lucky ones. Not everything works for everyone. And some people may be able to cure Alzheimer's, but the body fix won't work. Some people can fix their bodies, but their minds just never come back. That may not be the way that we'd like immortality to come about, but it kind of seems like it's the way that it probably would shake out. And it's those kind of little believable details that really make the book feel like it has one foot in the future. Some other things that I really enjoyed, you have high schools where students are expected to research and analyze their world and then take actions on the results. So it's not necessarily what we're talking about now, where we've got No Child Left Behind and the standards that it established and the push to teach to the test and memorizing large amounts of data without necessarily understanding large amounts of data and understanding what to do with it. In this world, it's entirely changed about. It's assumed that the data will always be within your grasp, and it's what you do with it, how you find it, that becomes really important. Almost everything in the world is prepackaged, with no user serviceable parts printed on the outside of the packages. And while this isn't necessarily appealing to me, what is appealing is how, in one scene, Robert has this sudden overwhelming urge to cut open one of these components to see what's inside. And I think that will appeal to makers everywhere. A major subplot, the digitization of a library by pulping its books, is a great take on similar debates that are happening right now as Google is going out and trying to scan, you know, hundreds of thousands of books to build up this digital library. Well, they just take it one step further by actually tearing apart the books, sucking them into a vacuum cleaner, and then digitizing the images as they go by and capturing the pages from every possible angle. As someone who works in a library at his day job, I can certainly... Well, let's just say that this particular subplot really resonated with me. All in all, this is a really engaging, fun, imaginative read, offering an amazing and occasionally terrifying vision of the future. I think if you want to get a taste of what could come, where things like Twitter are headed, where YouTube's headed, where Google Maps are headed, then you would do well to read this book.
You must be listening to the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbn.com. Amazing!
That'll about do it for Radioactive number 53. As always, I'm looking for feedback. You can send it to me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can Skype me. My username is Skype. You can find me at MySpace at myspace.com/knewquist. And I'm usually on Twitter at twitter.com/newcavic.